keep going. So let me talk to you about this wonderful thing. You know what these are?
Yeah.
They're called sanctification checkers.
Okay.
When you're a parent and you're going to the bathroom in the middle of the night and you step on these, we're determining how sanctified you are. It's what I think McDonald's toys do for us.
Okay.
You know, you step on it and you're like, whoa, blessed be. Legos. We're all created for connection. How's a Lego connect? It's amazing that every Lego looks different, but it all connects, right?
Yeah.
There's different colors. Oh, that's not a concept. Different shapes and sizes, but they connect. And we're all Legos created for connection. God has built us for this. So let me tell you, in Genesis 4, the first time in the Bible, a city is discussed. Mm-hmm. And you know who it's created for? Cain. Mm-hmm. You know, Cain does a little problem. He gets mad at his brother and kills him. And he flees, but God puts a protection over him. You ever study that? That's a really interesting passage. And says no one's to harm him. But he's lonely. So God creates the city. It's named for his son. And so the purpose of the city is what? Connection. Community. Now there's this thing called sin that enters the world. And what do we see at the Tower of Babel? It's all broken up. Community is lost. Now let me tell you an interesting part, and this comes from Leviticus, and I wouldn't suggest you preach this, but it helps us understand, because this is really hard. Seriously, this is a hard passage to deal with. But if a woman was raped in Judea, they would stone and kill the man. The law demanded it. But if a woman was raped in Jerusalem, they would stone and kill both of them. Why? Because God's law is built that they would say it was consensual, because if she yelled, the community would respond. So God's law is built on the fact that his community will respond to each other. And out in the rural area in Judea, there might not be anyone else around. That's a hard passage to deal with, but I think it takes us to this truth that we have to understand that God's law is established on community. He builds it, sin breaks it up, but we have this wonderful thing called Pentecost. It's part of our theology, still is, by the way. I check. And the Holy Spirit comes, and what's he do? He unites what sin had broken apart. So community is an essential part of what we're about. So we've got to figure that out. So let me tell you about some changes. There's a book called Bowling Alone by Robert Putnam. It's a big sociology book. And it's written in the study. He's a researcher from Harvard. And he is an agnostic Jew. So he just wrote a book called American Grace that I've been reading some, and it's one of those where I read for a while and then I'm like, I need something else. But he contends that the hope for community in America is the church. Agnostic Jew. Because he sees that. He studied all these groups, and since the 60s, every major group, the Eagles and the Moose Lodges and PTAs and the Republican Party and the Democrat Party and NAACP and all of these groups he looks at, and all of them have declined since the 60s. And he says, without community, you have no social capital. With no social capital, you cannot bring about any societal change. So we are a lonely world. We're back to the Tower of Babel because we're not having that community. So what's changed since the 60s? I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and I'm the youngest of three boys. And growing up, we would run out the front door every morning in the summer. We would eat our cereal, we were out the front door. Generally, I tried to be the first one down so I could get the baseball 3D trading card out of the cornflakes before my brothers do. They loved when I'd stick my hand through there. And then we went out and we played all day up and down the block. I was spanked by probably every mother on that block at some point in time. And it was my brother's fault. But this idea that our block, everyone knew each other. Mm-hmm. What did you do in the evenings?
Y'all
went out front, sat on your porches, and y'all talked across the street. Now, let there be a car drive up that street during the day that no one knew, and what happened? Every mom, they were out there. Let there a fight break out, and any mother could have dealt with it. At lunch, say one mom would yell, "It's time for lunch," and we knew we all better get home. And we would eat, and then what we would do? You were back out the front porch. But in the 60s, where did the porch go? To the back. Architecture changed. And then there was this wonderful invention called a privacy fence. We want our privacy. And then, garage door opener. Did someone just say that? Did you read my notes? The garage door opener comes, and what do we do now? We wave at our neighbors. If I ask you this question, could you name to me everyone who lives beside you, behind you, and in front of you right now?
Yep.
Most of us can't. Something else happened. I'll be 50 in July, and I remember we would run outside right before night and run through the sprinkler and go lay in front of the fan and try to get to sleep before we got hot. Did any of you ever do that? Some of you are lying. And then my parents got these window air conditioners, and they had one in their bedroom and we had one in the living room. And it was this wonderful invention. So my brothers and I, we would take turns. And so you would sleep on the couch, which was the prime spot because you could turn the things right down on you. And then the next best spot was right beside the couch on the floor. And the worst spot was the furthest away. And it would be my night to sleep on the couch. And then I'd wake up in the morning and I would be on the furthest away somehow. I slept sound and my brothers took advantage of it. But then Central Air came. But it used to be that you would open your windows and you'd talk and you'd get the breeze and you'd hear your neighbors and you'd talk to them. But things changed in America.
Yeah.
And things changed in our neighborhoods. And we no longer begin to be communities. And I talked to you earlier about then church changed. We begin to measure Sunday morning worship. And we begin to see things in numbers that maybe weren't about community. I don't care what you call it, but Sunday school still matters. Community still matters within the church. You know, we see in the book of Acts, what did they do? They broke them up in groups and had people responsible for them. And if you were hurting, your group took care of it. And I fear that we've outsourced compassion to the world. And we'd say, oh, you're hungry? Go down the street. Our church gives bags of groceries to that group. Go down there and let them feed you. I no longer have connection. I've outsourced my compassion. I've outsourced what I believe is the purpose that God created us for. Because it's easier and it's cleaner. Because if I really get to know you, it's messy. And if I start getting in your life, you may take advantage of me. I think next Friday we celebrate or remember something about taking advantage of someone, don't we? But we don't want to do that. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer says it is for us to come and die.
Yeah.
And in that dying, it is about living
together.
And so this idea is this whole, how many of you love to go get your driver's license renewed? And being holy sanctified folks, not one of you lie about your weight. I know that. And but we take a number and then we sit there. And I saw a commercial last night for Nationwide. Have you seen that? Where that little girl goes up and they give her the number. And it was like 72 and it's like number 18. It's like, so we want to make it as neat and organized. It's got to be a good program, right? And we stand them in line and we try to programize. Is that a word? Compassion. And pretty soon, we buy into this idea that it's about feeling sorry for. And we're all Legos, created for connection. That crazy man in Mark 5, society said, he's not worthy of our connection. Woman at the well. A young boy who was one willing to give up his lunch.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what we can build together. I was at a district assembly and I spoke and we gave everyone there a Lego and said, I want you to build something. And they're like, oh, we can't. And I said, okay, so let's imagine. We said, your role builds something, and so your 5 or 6 Legos aren't going to build much. But that's not how God intended it.
Yeah.
How many churches you have now? Right?
63.
What could 63 churches build together?
Yeah.
A beautiful cathedral fleshing out Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
It's the church. And in each of those who are part of your churches respectively are hundreds and hundreds of folks. For each a Lego brought together. And in that, we can make a connection to God and to each other. It's really about Legos. And so, my challenge to you is to figure out in the kingdom today, how do we reclaim that? What I fear is maybe we bought into the lie when well-intentioned, our president then, Lyndon Johnson, said it's the government's job to take care of the poor. Maybe we begin to lose our relevancy at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
When we said, okay, we'll let you do that and we'll be about gathering and not going. I can remember times when my dad would come in and someone from church would pull in the driveway and he'd say, sons, need to go outside. And we knew we were to go outside and play until Dad would call us in. And, you know, we talked. And it was that week, maybe that month, that Mom and Dad helped that family pay their bills. Because that's what the church did. It wasn't a program. It was just life together. The idea of saying, you know what, you're hurting right now. There's this wonderful picture. Have any of you ever seen this? It's from the Olympics. And a guy is running, and all of a sudden, he tears his Achilles.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to finish, and he's hopping. It's a wonderful picture. You can Google it. And out of the stands comes his dad.
Yeah.
His dad, security tries to stop him, but Dad avoids him. He puts his arm around his son. And together they hop to the finish line. He didn't win, but it wasn't about winning. It was about finishing. And maybe this idea of paraclete is where we need to go as the church.
Yeah.
Where I help that guy with the broken leg, torn Achilles, or the messed up life. And I wrap my arms around him and say, let's finish together. By world standards and metrics, Jesus was a failure.
Yeah.
He picked 12. They all failed the test. One really bad. And he looks at the one who will betray him 3 times and says, I'm going to build my church with you. And so I think part of the struggle for us is we bought into the same lie as that woman at the well. God, I know you need to, but I can't do that. I can't disciple someone. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have time. Not me, God. And what he says is exactly you. Because not one of you will probably ever minister in the Near East Side of Indianapolis.
Yeah.
But God didn't call you there, he called my family.
Yeah.
And by the way, God didn't call us to success. He called us to obedience.
Mm-hmm.
And whether I ever get a nice certificate, whether I ever get human applause, that comes and goes. And we have this connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we built isn't about my life. Maybe we're too individualistic in our faith journey. But instead we build it together. And the kingdom is growing amazing.
Yes.
So what if we did that in St. Louis?
Mm-hmm.
What if we did that in our homes and our neighborhoods and our schools? What if we said, this is a communal experience to live life together?
Yeah.
Could it be different? So my challenge to you, as we're going to end and then I'm going to take questions, is to explore how it is that you build connections. Because compassion is all about connecting the broken people. It's not about bags of groceries. It's not about tutoring. It's not about any of this. It's about giving glory to the Father, connecting to people.